Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. This week, Seth Greenberg and Dan Dockage are coming at you with two episodes. They're recapping the first weekend of action and previewing the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. Be sure to check them out throughout the tournament. Listen to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Also, America's Caddy on ESPN Plus is hosted by Michael Collins, the quick-witted longtime caddy comedian and ESPN golf analyst as he interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, and part celebrity hangout, but full of laughs. Stream it on ESPN Plus. The Right Time is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth joining us here live from Washington, D.C. Dominique, did you see that tweet that the Bears sent out yesterday?
Yes, I did. I saw it.
People who have not seen this tweet, it was simply a tweet that said QB1, and then it was a picture of Andy Dalton.
But why? Nobody was asking for it. It wasn't a trend going on. All teams weren't sending out their QB1, especially if you're the social media manager. This had to be like somebody from the top. Somebody from the top went and told the social media manager, you got to send this out. And the social media manager was like, you know, this is a bad idea. Have you ever been on Twitter? You know what the internet's about? Because I assume if you're the guy who does social media, you know this ain't going to go well. You know this is going to blow up in your face, right? And some older dude who doesn't understand is like, hey, let's do a tweet thing about our quarterback and show that we love him.
The Bears were looking at it like, hey, man, we got to get people behind Andy, right? So we're going to put this out here. And I got news for any team. You're not going to convince fans to get behind somebody they've already seen play.
Forget team. Any person, organization, you should know. Relationships with your friends or spouses or whatever, you know. If they are against it, you are certainly not going to go directly at them and convince them to be with it. It's never happened in the history of arguments. No one has ever been convinced of something like that. You got to go around about. You got to set some breadcrumbs and let them come to it themselves. Like just saying, you know what? QB1. Y'all going to like it. That just incites the worst possible reaction on the internet of all places.
But my thing is, who in 2021, regardless of the social media part, right? Who says, we signed Andy Dalton, and we're here to let you know he's going to be the starter. Like, you got to at least pretend like it's going to be a competition. Like, you just can't set up a world where you just tell people, don't worry, guys, we got Andy. Because they're worried, and they're going to continue to worry.
That had to be meant for an audience of one. That was for Andy Dalton. Because if I remember correctly, there was like some speculation that maybe they'll go get someone else. And Andy Dalton like leaked or said, they told me I was going to be the starter. Like I remember that vaguely, that there was some rumors that Andy said, they told me I was coming here to start. So then people in the organization probably were telling other people like, hey, we ain't dumb. We know Andy is Andy. And then they was like, you know what? We got to show Andy we love him. Just because they put that tweet out obviously don't mean nothing. Like football coaches and general managers, organizations, like they lie. Like that's what they do. They lie for a living.
But Andy Dalton ain't good enough for them to make sure that, like, to feel like they got to tell him that they love him. That's not something everybody gets.
Your quarterback is your quarterback, though. And it doesn't even matter about your quarterback. Like, I've been lied to. Like, who the hell cares what backup cornerback thinks? Like, I've been lied to. They just don't want no drama. They'd rather lie to you than confront you with the real, which is weird because if you have a bad game, you better believe Monday morning, coach gonna be in your face like, hey, you stink. But for some reason, they don't like these particular rumors. Like I had trade rumors when I was in Denver and Mike Shanahan called me up to his office. Like, I just want you to know, we are absolutely not considering trading you. A couple months later, I'm in Atlanta.
Look, man, they told Mike Glennon he was going to be the starter. And I think he got 2 games before they were like, what were we thinking? And they put Mitch in there. Like, Mitch got to be the one most frustrated because, look, you're not going to tell me that Andy Dalton is better than Trubisky. Like, not that Trubisky is good, but I think he's better than Andy Dalton. And now this dude, Trubisky couldn't even get one of them backup jobs where you might have a chance to get in there. He got a you don't even need to learn the plays backup job. Like, I don't know what it would take for them to bench Josh Allen. I also don't know what it would take for, like, Josh Allen to get hurt. That's a big, giant man, right?
Josh Allen, if anything, he's going to have the Cam Newton career where it's just going to be overuse injuries. Just him bashing people. And at the end of his career, I'm like, man, that's some wear and tear. But nobody's going to take him down. And you're right. Trubisky might get a couple games if they happen to be as good as they were last year and the rest of the division is trash. Maybe he'll be able to close out week 16 and 17 or something. But they ain't looking for nobody. You found them in Buffalo. They are not looking for nobody up there. And the Trubisky versus Dalton point, if you were to erase their names, I think 100% of fans and media and front office people would be more excited about having Mitch Trubisky than Andy Dalton. He's younger. He's more athletic. He has some decent seasons where you could convince yourself that he could get better. Like, it's nothing to get excited about for Andy Dalton.
Trubisky, I mean, I think the big thing for him is he was in the wrong draft, right? Like, he's Sam Bowie in the draft that he was in. And again, I don't think the dude has been great, but I don't think he's, like, irredeemable. I have not found him to be nearly as terrible as other people have made him out to be. And now they out here treating him like he black. Like they don't give up on white boys this easy, right? A white dude that is, let me make sure I get the age correct. A white dude who, as of this moment, is 26 years old. He'll be 27 when the season starts, and the whole damn league just gave up on him. Like, he's not Blake Bortles. You know what I mean? Like he's not Blaine Gabbert. He's not that caliber of wasn't good player. Like, I just think you could do so much worse than him. And the Bears were like, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
Sam Bowie was at least 7 feet tall and had four productive years in college. Like, I feel like you are denigrating Sam Bowie right now, but you're right. Sam Bowie is identified as the guy who wasn't Michael Jordan, and Mitch Trubisky is the guy who wasn't Patrick Mahomes and wasn't Deshaun Watson, which has entirely different connotations now after all the allegations.
But see, but also why he's Sam Bowie, though, is Sam Bowie wasn't bad. Sam Bowie just wasn't Michael Jordan, right? Because the thing about that draft in basketball is LaJuan was the number one pick and Houston never complained. Like, as a city, there was nobody in Houston that was out here like, damn, we could have had Michael Jordan. It's like, no, we had this guy. Like, if the Bears had taken Watson instead of Mahomes, it's a little awkward now, but Watson would have been their LaJuan. It'd have been like, yeah, we could have got better, but that's cool. We got this guy. You know, we did all right the first couple years or whatever it is. I think the big thing with Trubisky, and this is where everybody's got to be fair about this, they've coached him poorly. They have not used him in the ways, like we talked about this early with Josh Allen. If his name was Jaheim, he would have been better his first 2 years because they would have had him running Jaheim plays. Every now and then, they would have Trubisky running them Malik plays, but then not really. They would not do that. But if they got him out there on the move, like just a little bit, you telling me he couldn't be as good as Alex Smith? Because, I mean, bless his heart, but Alex Smith in the last 10 years has become one of the most overrated players that there's ever been. You may not have been able to win a Super Bowl with him, but you could win some games.
You're right. And to point that out, because what comes to my mind is the guy who's propped up a lot is Jared Goff. But Jared Goff has abilities with his arm that Mitch Trubisky doesn't have. And Mr. Trubisky has the athleticism and Malik ability that Jared Goff does not have. So you're right. They could bring something close to Alex Smith because Alex Smith was that dude as an athlete before his leg injury. And when he was young, like, Alex Smith was that dude at Utah. He was running them Mariota plays. Like, that was the comparison for Alex Smith back then. But I don't know if it's all coaching, though, to be honest with you. I mean, you're not saying it's all coaching. I don't want to put those words in your mouth. He could be better. But there's no amount of better that would have people not still make those comparisons to Watson and Mahomes. You can blame the coaches, but
nah, he was the wrong pick.
Right.
There's no way around that. And I would like to, again, use this opportunity because the Bears get all the hell because they actually took a quarterback instead of taking those other quarterbacks. There's still a team out there run by a purported genius that took Solomon Thomas instead of taking one of those quarterbacks. And now they out here trying to figure out if they okay with Jimmy Garoppolo before they go back out here. I'm sorry. This just doesn't come back enough. A man said he didn't take those guys because he thought he was going to sign Kirk Cousins in the offseason.
Kyle Shanahan. So that's something you know very well is you can be really smart at one thing. Don't mean you are smart at everything.
Yes.
And John Lynch is probably not making all the decisions there from a roster standpoint. But I think it's hard to, Where is Solomon Thomas now? Didn't he sign somewhere in free agency?
Oh, he did? He ain't even at the point where I check all those things.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's a fair point. No one should actually be checking up on Solomon Thomas, but I saw it come across the wire at some point. I was like, oh, that's a problem.
But now that, like, San Francisco's interesting to me because they're one of those teams, they had that Super Bowl run, and I think that people looked at it like, oh, man, the window is wide open. That's not how the NFL works.
Nope.
The window is not wide open. And they came out here looking sorry last year. And I know that a significant part of that had to do with injuries, but they don't have a quarterback. And I think I could be wrong about this, but I think they have a coach who thinks that he's the quarterback and that there's just a body who is in the game that is doing the things. Like if Kyle Shanahan looks at Kirk Cousins and says, that's my guy, I don't understand what he thinks is like good about quarterbacks.
Yeah, that makes sense. And he made that trade. I think that my guess is that Kyle Shanahan recognizes that there are some guys that are special. But I think Kyle Shanahan also recognizes that it's hard to get one of those guys. Yeah. And you want to get an average guy and you can set him up to succeed. The thing about the Solomon Thomas draft pick and why I wasn't that critical then and I wouldn't be that critical of it now, even though it was a failure, is nobody knows what the hell they're doing with that position. Like, let's be honest. No one knows. It is a bleeping coin toss. And so, like, I understand you want to keep taking shots because you might get lucky and end up with Patrick Mahomes, but you're probably not going to win the lottery. Winning the lottery is not a retirement plan.
Right.
Build up a team. What you see happen more often and more consistently in the NFL is you build up a talented team. You end up finding an average quarterback because there are plenty of them. And you make a run. Like, it's just the only way to reasonably build this up. So, like, when your team stinks and you're like, oh, we're just going to draft another quarterback. Like, it's come up with the Eagles this year at number six. Like, don't draft a quarterback. You might get lucky. You might find Joe Montana. You probably won't.
Well, this is where I do give the 49ers credit. At least they took Solomon Thomas and not Mitch Trubisky, right? Like they did have the option of making the really big mistake. And they were like, nah, not only are we not going to do that, we're going to hoodwink somebody into coming up here and doing that themselves. Because you and I both were on this. We were not wild about Watson as like some other people were. And especially coming out into the draft, I wasn't. Because I got the whole idea, look at what he did in college. He was a winner. I'm a Texas football fan. I saw Vince Young do all that stuff in college too. One of the big things that got Vince. Vince ain't really had an arm. And Watson is not a like really strong arm dude. And he's not a Michael Vick type of Lamar Jackson type of athlete, right? Like this wasn't, he can move, but it wasn't going to be now you have to be worried about this dynamic threat in the run game. So I was like, if he's a pretty good NFL athlete, not a great NFL athlete, and he doesn't have a great arm, I wasn't so sure about that. And then with Mahomes, he wasn't that dude so much in college that he has become. But I'm not the professional, damn it. Kyle Shanahan's supposed to be the genius. And if you're going to be the genius, get out here and gene.
His gene is in play design and setup. His gene is not in scouting. Like, that's an entirely different skill set.
Let me ask you this. Gabe had brought this up. You had a heavy role with the Players Association in negotiating the CBA in 2011. This new one, man, they just getting all the money. And they took Thursday Night Football straight to Amazon for streaming.
What I find most interesting about this is like the future of it. Where is the money going to come from? Because they are extracting so much money from a few partners. They're going to get to the point where, I mean, they're already at this point. They're only like 5 potential companies that could potentially afford to pay NFL dollars.
Right.
At some point, you go price yourself out the market. That's a good problem to have. I'm not complaining about it for them, but that keeps popping in my mind as they keep selling. We're going to keep going up. From who? Who other than Amazon and Apple, like Facebook? That's it. Companies tend not to come out on the winning side when you are in some sort of financial arrangement with any of those three.
Well, people keep assuming that it can only go up, right? Like, I think that people believe in and buy into the idea of the indestructibility of the NFL as a product. And look, we are coming up on a time, but there's a generation that just doesn't watch live sports in the ways that we grew up watching them. I don't know when that's going to really come in and affect the bottom line. Let me tell you who the big winner in that deal is. And it is Amazon, but I don't think it's Amazon for the reasons that people might think. Like, cool, they got Thursday Night Football. I mean, all right. Like, you get a decent game there every now and then. Like, Thursday Night Football to me is some if it's on. It's not like Sunday where I'm like, okay, this is going to be the thing that I watch. But where this is huge for Amazon to me is I don't think people realize that with their Prime subscription comes these videos. And I talked to somebody who worked at Amazon about this, and they say that one of their biggest fights with Prime Video is people don't know that Prime comes with videos, because that's not the reason why they do it. You get Prime because you order stuff on Amazon all the time and you don't want to pay the delivery charge, and you get the 2-day delivery. It makes everything much easier. But for them, now a whole world has opened up. Like, one thing I've learned about Amazon Prime is you're going to have to pay a little bit of money, but you can rent or buy basically any movie that there is on Amazon Prime and watch it. I haven't seen Insert Thing Here in forever. I bet you it's on Amazon Prime. Like they did Coming to America this year after Paramount got it. I think Paramount wasn't going to be able to get their streaming thing up to speed in time. And so they backed out. And then Amazon wound up getting that. And again, I think for a lot of people, that was the day that they learned that their Amazon Prime subscription came with access to all of this content. Like that to me is where the big thing comes in for them, is now it'll make it easier for them to sell content. I don't think it's going to drive Prime subscriptions, because I think the people who were going to have Prime got it, but it's going to now make it where they are getting more of people's attention for the content that they have on Prime.
We can fully flex this into a business podcast, because I do think it's an interesting thing. The Sunday Ticket was meant to get people to subscribe to DirecTV, and it worked for the time that it worked. Amazon is not concerned about this. They are going for world domination, and this is an advertising play for them, which I know as ridiculous as it sounds, like to pay this much money for NFL football, but it's to your point. This is about awareness, and they want to dominate every sector of the commercial industry. And this is how they're going to do it. Obviously, they want people to tune in, but they want to have them, like now you watch a live football game and there's ads on the live football game to sell detergent or insurance or whatever. So now you're going to watch these Amazon Thursday night games, which gets better numbers than just about anything else. And they're going to be like, hey, coming up on Amazon Prime, The Boys, or whatever the show is. And you're going to get inundated with that. You know those little things that pop up at the bottom of the screen where there's like a little character from a TV show dancing around, right? And like, Sunday nights, check this out. Jesus, we are going to get Marvelous Mrs. Mabley dancing across the screen. It's going to be Man in the High Castle. All Amazon shows coming to America. They are going to get us to watch it. And Amazon Prime is a outstanding deal. If you got a little bit of extra money, you better go ahead and get that Prime, because it comes through clutch.
But this is like the Olympics. I think the thing that people don't realize, NBC don't typically make money on the Olympics, right? Like, it's not a balance sheet thing on the Olympics. But what they can do with the Olympics is tell you everything that's coming up this fall, right? Like, that's it. By the time the Olympics are over, you know the whole NBC lineup. And but that's something that's interesting. I hadn't really thought about till you said it. None of the other streaming services really have a place where they can do this. Because also, most of the stuff that's on streaming services does not have commercials, right? Like, they might throw in some stuff, you know, like you watch Snowfall on Hulu, they'll throw the ads in there or whatever. Yep. But it ain't really like Hulu ads per se. Amazon is going to have a broadcast that is built for ads in a much different way, and then be able to tell us what their stuff is. Because like, you just find out stuff on Netflix, you go on Twitter, somebody told you that they watch something. Yep. Mm-hmm. You're never in a place where Netflix is telling you coming soon. Mm-mm. You just go on as there. Amazon about to be hitting you, letting you know, like, not only is that coming soon, we also got 2-for-1 on them Tide Pods.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to win when you're Amazon, you have this much power. But yeah, that's the thing that got my attention, is how they're going to be commercial breaks. They're not selling commercials.
Yeah, and that's where I'll give the NFL, though. They looked at, oh, here's where that next money is coming from. Because their problem is, they always got to find, how do you make more money on something that hasn't changed? Like, for example, The Right Time with Bomani Jones. You know what Foxworth Friday is? 17th game. How do we get a little bit more out of what it is that we're doing? We play in a 17th game. And the way they found more money is, oh, we've got these new suitors, and now people are finally like streaming in their homes in such a way that's going to make it possible for us to still have the wide distribution that we used to have. Boom.
It's still like the one thing that is like a little unseemly, like everyone is excited. Everyone, the NFL is making more money. ESPN's going to have a Super Bowl. That's great. Let's celebrate it. All while we're in a free agency period that is depressed.
Yes.
That's tough. As a former player and former president of the union, watching that is like, and I understand why it happened that way. Like, that's the way the CBA is set up, and someone's going to have to lose, and the owners are going to lose too. But the difference is the owners are taking a hit right now, but they'll own the teams forever. So all the bounce back, when it bounces back, they're going to be fine. The players who hit free agency this year, they stuck. The players who are in the league 10 years from now, when all the money hits, like, they're going to be fine. So as a body, the players aren't getting hurt any more than the league. But on an individual basis, and as someone who, like, committed when I was 6 years old to, like, get to the NFL and, like, played for free in college and then played for less than market value when I was drafted, like, finally getting a free agency. Like, I know that people don't want to hear this, but that was my Super Bowl, bro. Like, that was it. Yeah. When I signed that deal, I was like, we made it. That feeling that some guys have when they're the number one pick in the draft. Like, I didn't have that. I got drafted in third round and everybody around me was happy. And I was like, more work to do. I signed that deal and I was like, you know what? My kid's going to be fine. Their kid's going to be fine. My parents going to be fine. This is why you sacrifice, why you expose yourself to so much risk. And to have guys work for 20 plus years to get to that point and then show up and they're like, hey, pandemic, money's short, 1 year deal, no contract for you. Like, it's life, but it sucks, man.
This was the worst year to be a free agent.
My God.
The guys at the top, like Dak Prescott, he was always going to get his money. You know, and that's the thing in the NBA said about the All-Star game. Those dudes were going down there to boost up the cap, but the cap wasn't getting boosted for the All-Stars. That cap was getting boosted for that next level of dudes. And this just had to be the worst year. Like, Juju Smith-Schuster went out there and signed that one-year deal. I got it. He's just like, yo, I'm going to try to come back with this some money.
Yeah, but he's the only one I don't have any sympathy for.
Why is that?
Because apparently Patrick Mahomes wanted him to come down there and work the slot. And he was like, I'm going to go back for a one-year deal with my man Ben Roethlisberger. That and his hair color, the combination of those things are a combination of really bad decisions. And I like Juju. I love his dancing, TikTok, have fun, but make good decisions.
Yeah, I there's no way I would have gone back to play with a quarterback who doesn't have an arm. Like, I understood if you didn't want to go play for the Ravens because we don't know what that's going to look like.
Yeah, like, you know? I can understand not wanting to go down and play for the Ravens because you're going to be doing a lot of blocking.
Yeah, but I think he's going to do, I think there'll be less blocking than it was last year because they traded for Chark, the dude from Jacksonville. And I think part of why those dudes had to block is, quite honestly, their receivers, that's what they were better at.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, like, I look at Willie Sneed, I'm like, nah, put that hand in the dirt, dog. Like,
twisted like, sister. Willie Sneed got that twisted sister hair. But yeah, he's a big physical dude who gets caught by linebackers because he can block, which is fine. But if I'm Juju and I got a one-year deal sitting out there to go play with Patrick, and I got a one-year deal sitting out there to go back with Pittsburgh, like, I don't care how much I love Pittsburgh. Like, I'm going to have to go down there, win me a Super Bowl, get the best stats of my career, and then see what that market talk about next year. Like, this is what I got to do.
What you think it's like to be Tyrod Taylor right now?
I never even thought about Tyrod. I hadn't thought about Tyrod Taylor since they signed him.
They signed him for that kind of sort of starter money, right? Like, not really starter money, but 1 year, $12 million. That is not, we plan on you being the backup. That is, we hope you're the backup, but you might be the starter. And of course, we thought that he might be the starter for one reason, and now it looked like he might be the starter for a whole nother reason. But for Tyrod, he's like, finally, something's happening to somebody else that will let me play.
I was just about to say the same thing. Like, I've never known a Tyrod Taylor situation where the fans weren't looking for somebody else. And, like, Tyrod was doing his thing. Like, he was giving you peak Tyrod, protecting the ball, not taking too much risk, making some plays with his leg, winning you more games than you probably should. And the whole time, the fans are like, man, but there's somebody else out there. This might be the first time where the fans looking up like, man, thank God we got Tyrod.
And they're going to stick with Watson. So they're going to stick with Tyrod, too. Like, don't get me wrong. That painkilling injection he got last year ain't going to be the last. There will be more on the way. Like, Tyrod need to be out here. I'm Tyrod Taylor. And let me tell you about Toradol.
Man, going to be longing for the punctured lung of L.A.
Now, I'm looking. That's actually an interesting thought. Like, what it's like for guys when you sign that free agent deal and, like, you know they're going to be sorry, but you just know you coming to get this money.
Him and the coach, they going to have the meetings where they both was like, man, we know the deal, but we going to get paid.
Yes.
Because he wasn't getting no jobs elsewhere, and he is coming down there to take this whooping for a big mound of cash, and that's fine. You got to do what you got
to
do.
My favorite thing about the coach is they keep cutting to the coach, asking him questions about Deshaun Watson, and he's like, he's committed to the Houston Texans. That's all I got. He ain't getting out here like actually carrying no water. He's like, hey, man, he got a contract. He play for us.
This is essentially what it's like. David Culley and Tyrod Taylor are the mid-majors or the small schools that go get thumped early in the season by Alabama just to get that check. And you got to get that check. Stay healthy. Be careful.
Yeah. But let me tell you this about Culley. It'll be so wild if Culley come out here and he turned out to be that dude.
Okay, bet on it.
All right, I ain't betting on it, but it would be great. You know what I'm saying? See, that's the thing. You and I talk about this, but you always say that I'm different than you in the sense that you still kind of hold on to the, like, you know, root for the underrepresented black man in cases when it happens. This is the ultimate case. Like you need to be like, this is the time for you to be like, yo, I see a spark in Culley, but nobody can see it because they so sorry.
Rooting for and lying are two different things. Like, I can be rooting for David Culley. Like, I hope the Texans go undefeated. David Culley, coach of the year. But what evidence do I have to suggest that that is the case? Like, it's hard for me to get excited about that.
Zero. Dog, the thing for me about the Texans is I make my calls to Houston. I talked to somebody this weekend, and he made this point. This was really, like, the way he put it was so interesting. He's like, people are operating on the assumption that Cal McNair is his father.
Right.
Right. And there's been a lot of understandable presumptions from people who think that race is driving what's going on with Watson. Honestly, in a way that I don't think is true. Like, I understand why people think that, like, oh, you let J.J. Watt go, but you won't let Watson go. Yeah, because they don't want J.J. Watt. Right. Like, this dude is really good. They want to keep him 100%. But what the thing is with McNair is he's just not bright. Like, people who like him that I've talked to are just like, but the dude just isn't smart. Like, it just really fundamentally comes down to the team is owned by somebody who's not smart. And I think I talked to you about this, where Mike Meltzer does radio in Houston, was like, I don't understand why they had Cal run the team when this other son seems far more qualified. Yeah, he's doing the stuff that requires qualification. Anybody can own a football team. You just got to buy the damn thing.
Yeah, you can't fail with a football team. It is a kind of closed ecosystem that exists with revenue sharing and everything. Like, you can be a terrible team. You can't be a terrible company in America and still make money. Like, eventually the competition gonna come get you. In the NFL, it doesn't matter because the cartel essentially is the NFL. So unless the NFL is run poorly, the whole league is run poorly, you still gonna get paid. Like, you can lose every game. Them checks coming. We don't got relegation. This is not the Premier League. Them checks are going to keep coming. That money's going to keep coming. The value is going to still go up, which is why, like, I could understand them looking like, all right, whatever. Go ahead. Take this toy. We'll be there to watch the games on Sunday.
Well, think about this, right? Very often you hear people say that the big problem is you can't fire the owner, right? Like, it's a very common phrase. But there is one team that can fire the owner, and it's the Packers.
Right.
Because the Packers don't actually have an owner. They just have a CEO because they are a publicly traded company. Okay. Do you know how many CEOs that the Packers have had since 1953?
Not very many.
Five.
Yeah, I know.
Five. That's it. This dude that's running it now has been there since 2008. The dude before him had the job for 19 years. The dude before him had the job for 8 years. The dude before him had the job for 25 years. I am simply saying that even if you can fire the owner, and by the way, the Packers weren't good for significant stretches of this time that I'm talking about. Even if you can fire the owner, nobody fires the owner because anybody can make money off a football team.
It's impossible to fail. It's a hell of a setup that they got there, which brings me back to free agency. And it bothers me so much. Like, I don't know. I mean, they moved some money to bolster the cap, but I hate that the cap had to go down at all because the people who suffer are the players. And it's the players with the least leverage, of course, right? Because we saw Dak Prescott. His deal wasn't impacted. That's the same deal he would have gotten if we never had a pandemic.
So you've written about this, but I think a lot of people could stand to hear it. You wrote about the year that you spent after you were traded in Atlanta, your contract year. You know, we always talk about guys being on contract years and the uptick in performance. But for you, what was that contract year like?
miserable. Like, I don't know. I'm careful with the word depression because, like, I didn't, like, need medication right. or I didn't, like, seek help in the depression or whatever sadness I was feeling. Oh, it left as soon as the season was over. And I was like, oh, you're healthy? You had the best season of your career. You ended by playing really well in the playoffs with the team. Like, now you're a free agent. Like, so I wouldn't say I was like depressed, but it was like a toughest period I went through, like mentally, because the things that I was saying about free agency being my Super Bowl, like I was old enough at that point to no longer feel like I was living in a fairy tale. Like, right. I accepted how ruthless this business was. And I also saw that I was about to go into the next season of my career, which would have boosted my minimum salary. And I saw, you know, what happens to guys at this point is they are determined that they aren't good enough and you never get that big payday. And I knew that this was my last chance. I got traded down to Atlanta after Mike Vick was gone. So no one knew if Matt Ryan was any good. We thought his team was going to suck. And I got traded there the week of the first game and I was at the bottom of the depth chart. So I looked up and was like, yep, the dream that I had, being this big time rich guy who played in NFL, that's done. Cause like, we're going to be sorry. No one's going to care about me. I'm not going to get a contract. That was the first time when I started looking at graduate school and I was like, yeah, we got to figure out what we're going to do next. Cause I ain't about to just bounce around this league for league minimum for 10 more years. And everything worked out for me. I played great. Matt Ryan turned out to be really good. Every time I see Matt Ryan, I give him a big hug and he probably don't know, don't understand and don't care, but Jesus Lord.
He threw a touchdown his first pass in the NFL, yep. as I recall. That had to feel for you like, oh.
Oh, man. It was to, who was it to? Was it to Jenkins, too? I feel like an unlikely pair. It was like a skinny post to a guy whom I love, but I think he probably ran a 4.6.
Oh, Mike Jenkins?
Yeah.
And he I didn't have much good to say about that guy.
He went to the crib. It was a tough situation. So, yeah, I don't know. That's why I keep harping on that, because I just imagine what it must feel like. Because then I got traded, so it felt like it was out of my hands. But still, the performance on the field, like climbing the depth chart in Atlanta and actually playing well when I got on the field, like that was somewhat in my hands. These guys, completely out of their hands. They ain't never been to Wuhan. They were not in charge of lockdowns. They were not developing a vaccine. They just been playing football their whole life, sacrificing, catching these concussions, tearing these ligaments, trying to get this money. And yeah, Super Bowl, great. Win, great. I love it. I wish I would have won a Super Bowl. It'd have been real nice to have one of them fancy rings. I would have felt great about it. But I certainly wouldn't trade it for free agency. Not a day in my life.
Well, one of the things that gets me, and I understand where people are coming from, where they're like, the salary cap is just an illusion. No, it's not. Like, it is, it does bound what people can get paid, and it does bound how many of these guys that you can have, who can get what, when, and where. And yeah, there are guys that wind up having to go different places. Now, if you just want to have somebody, so for the Rams, for example, they wanted to have Aaron Donald, and they wanted to have Jalen Ramsey, right? And they wanted to have Matthew Stafford, and at the time it was Jared Goff. They could do that, but then you go look at the rest of the roster, there are dudes that now they cannot have. I mean, like, this is a thing.
Troy Hill and John Johnson.
Right.
Productive defensive backs. John Johnson, top five safety in the league. Both of them are in Cleveland right now.
Yeah, like, that team doesn't have the depth. And now those dudes have to go out there and try to figure this out in a year where that cap really ain't cracking.
I mean, you brought up the NBA a little bit, and max salaries is something that, like, frustrating, obviously, for the top guys, but it forces money to the other guys. And that's not a thing that happens in the NFL. The top guys going to get their money. And when the cap is suppressed, the bottom guys and those middle guys, like those guys, like the role that I would fall into, like those guys are the ones who are going to get their salaries compressed. And it, I know during the pandemic, lots of people are hurting. No one wants to hear about players getting $2 million or $3 million less than they deserve. But I always think about this when we talk about that sort of stuff is I remember the Chris Rock joke where he was talking about his neighborhood and how his neighbor was Jay-Z and Mary J. Blige, only black neighbors. And his white neighbor was just a regular old pull-your-tooth dentist.
The dentist.
Yeah. And I just think about, like, these dudes made miracles happen. Like, think of the odds. Like, they have made miracles happen to get to where they got. And to have that suppressed in any way or taken from them. Like, I understand that you wish that you could have it and whatever. Like, I wish you could have it too, but you didn't.
Yeah, nah. Sit your broke ass down. Like when this comes to people and all this talk, because the problem is there are levels to this. I've talked about this on here before, but there's levels to this that's hard to explain to people. And I say this and I get why nobody wants to hear it, but you got to be willing to listen. That minimum salary is what, like 500 G's?
Yeah.
500 G's when you're starting from zero or less than zero is just not as much money as you think, in large part because even if you wanted to live like you made 75 on that 500 G's, that's not an option when you're a player in the NFL. There's apartments that you can't really be out here living in. You know, depending on how big you are, you'd be like, there's cars that you can't have. And as much as people be like, well, you shouldn't care what people think about you, yo, you still can't be in the league out here pushing no Accord, man. Like, that's not how the game works. That's not
or a car living in the hood.
Your stature. Right.
You can't be living in the hood because things happen in the hood that you can't be nowhere near.
Right.
It's not only about living while you're in the league on that money. This money is like it has to last you the rest of your life. Essentially, yeah. Like we can hear about these stories and there are plenty of them of guys who made second careers. But if you think about how difficult it is to make to the NFL, and I, someone who people think of as like a smart player, like I sacrificed so many other opportunities. I'm in high school. I'm focused on getting a scholarship. That leaves aside all the other extracurriculars that could set you up for whatever. You're in college. You have no time to do all the things you're supposed to do. You don't get to choose the major that might be the most lucrative. You choose the major that allows you to be at practice on time and all that stuff. You don't do summer internships. You aren't building relationships in clubs. You aren't doing all the things that successful people end up doing in college. And then you enter the NFL. Let's say you spend 5 years in NFL. You're 27 years old and you are not qualified to do anything other than coach or be a bouncer when you get out. And so all the money that you have made in that 5 years, like it's kind of has to last you for a long time. Like you don't just walk out and walk into like a management role because nobody wants you there. You're not qualified to do it.
Well, there are also not that many people in the world that we look at it like you are one of the best people in the world at doing a thing that lots of people do. Now, go be good at something else. You know what I'm saying? Like, go be good. Like, I remember once I saw an interview with Twista. It's like 20 years ago. Twista was talking about this. And I think that this is after like Poe Pimp had come out and all of that. And he finally got a little shine or whatever. And then it reached a point where that dude had to go work at the car wash.
Right.
Right. And people are like, yo, you at the car wash? He's like, yo, what else am I supposed to do? But at least we're rapping. There's a possibility you might get another hit or something like that. You get in and do sessions and you can. No, there's only one level. That's the other thing about this, too. And with football, like at least with basketball, you can go to Europe. Like there's other places where you might get paid. There's only one place that pays for you to play football. That's it. It is the NFL. It's the only place.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing about the money. And I know, like you said, $500,000 is a lot to some people, and you can make that for a few years, but it's got to last you a long time. And there's some decisions that you can't be making because we all gonna come down hard on you if you find yourself in a bad situation.
Yeah, but also if you've been out here getting the hell out knocked out of you in order to do this, you damn right I'm about to get a fly ride. Like I deserve something of this. Like the idea is, well, you should have lived this Spartan existence while you were taking all this pain. And what the hell am I doing this for? Like, seriously, why am I here?
Yeah, I mean, you ain't got to explain it to me. I mean, I'm sure some people are still going to be annoyed and upset by it, but I think you say that makes you a hater. Like, that qualifies to me.
Yes,
like,
it is hating. I mean, the reason it's 100% hating, it is entirely what about me. People's responses when they look at it are strictly what about me. Well, I wish I could. I wish you could, too. But in the meantime, I'm the one that's doing it right now. Right. They can relate more to the idea of the CEO of a business and the business is losing money than they can on the idea that, like, because a lot of times these businesses make decisions, it ain't because they're losing money, it's because they're not making as much money as they could doing something else. And you can understand that. And when you make it 500 G's, as I'm trying to explain to people, it's not as much money as you think. You know who really ain't trying to hear that? All those people who've been expecting you to give them money.
Yeah.
In your space.
We didn't even include that in the calculation.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, and this is also, it's worth noting that people always put this off on Black people. Like the idea that when Black people come together, the the expectation in the community is that you got to give back. You need to talk to some white folks. There's a lot of them out here paying their parents rent. A lot of them out here paying their parents medical bills. Because if you don't have money, you go to the person who got money. And the thing about playing sports is, unlike the other jobs where you might have some money, everybody knows you got money. Like, people don't really ask me for money like that. And I'm convinced it's because they don't know how much money I make.
And you want to do it too. That's the thing about being the person in that situation. And it's not even like, you don't have to come from poverty. Like, I didn't come from poverty. Like, it's come from middle class situations. And you know, you hear about those stories. Like, you want to buy your mom a house. You want to be able to take care of your grandmother. You want to be able to do these things. And that's coming out of the money that you have for the rest of your life. I don't even know how we got all the way down this rabbit hole, but that's one of the things that stresses me out or just upsets me, frankly, about the way that athletes are covered and the way people talk about athletes is you point out that thing where people are like, man, I wish it was me. I wish I could play a game for a living. Like, yeah, I wish you could too. But also, you know, when you weren't wishing this was you, all the painful times, like the 15 years of unpaid labor,
right,
that led up to this opportunity to make $500,000, like, ain't want to be me then when you was getting drunk in college. You ain't want to be me then when I was at 5 a.m. working out. You didn't want to be me then when I was on the sideline. My teammate couldn't remember his name. You ain't want to be me then when the helicopter came to helivac a man off because his spinal cord got fractured. Like, you didn't want to be us. Now, all of a sudden, wish I could.
Oh, payday.
Oh, yeah. That's where you show up.
Yeah, Lavelle Bowden, coach at North Carolina Central basketball, got that great line. Everybody want what it look like. Don't nobody want what it feel like. Right? Like in the end, they want it on that back end. And the one thing, because I know we got to wrap up soon, like people that idea of like you're playing a child's game. Yo, children shouldn't be playing this game. What are you talking about? But when it's time for you to go over the middle, it's a man's game. Right? Right? Like, yeah, this, you're lucky you get to play it. No. When children play this, you play with flags.
I think I was 10 years old. We played in a game, just Pop Warner, whatever. We were a pretty good team, and we were playing this other team, had this big running back. So coach got us all hyped up. We end up tackling this big running back on one play, broke his leg, and like his foot, his cleat stayed in the ground, and he fell, and his shin was ripping through his skin. Yeah. And our whole team started crying. They ended up getting him off the field. We finished the game. That was ridiculous, of course. College, I had a guy, a receiver, just run like a routine play in practice. That was they helivac'd him to the hospital because something happened to his spine. In the NFL, my rookie year, we had a preseason game against the 49ers. They had an offensive lineman who died in a locker room from a heart condition after the game. We were in Denver. He didn't make it back to San Francisco. He died in a locker room. I played in the game where Kevin Everett, I was running down on kickoff when Kevin Everett was like paralyzed. This whole time, I'm like, nah, this is normal. This is what's supposed to happen. I get out of the game and look back on my career and like, I could go down a list of a bunch of other crazy things, but nobody out here volunteering to be none of these people. Nobody like, man, wish I could. No, you don't.
Like, you know that scene in Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood, where that dude smoked that joint and it take him out? And they're looking over him, and they're like, yo, I think he did. Yo, pass that shit, right? Dog, great hit. Let's rock.
Move it down. Practice? We ain't never stopped practice. That time in college, a helicopter had to take him to the hospital. We had an old lineman pass out in training camp. They put him in the back of one of those like gator four-wheeler type things. We just watched his body bounce because he was unconscious as they took him back to the locker room. And the coaches, every time something like that happened, the coach says the same thing. Move it down. We just move the drill down 10 yards and keep it working while the helicopter is landing on the other practice field.
Them things are like snow days, right? Like, I'm from the South. It don't take much snow to shut it down because it don't snow very much here, right? But in the places where it snow all the time, it take a lot. It ain't really no snow day, right? They're like, yo, we got trucks, we got salt. Because if we stopped every time this happened, we'd never get any work done.
I grew up in Baltimore, and like we were like decent with snow. It was fine, but we would shut down if we had like a big blizzard, which we had a couple of those. When I went to business school in Cambridge, we had the most ridiculous snowstorm ever. I'm walking to class. The snow, they had paths through the sidewalk. The snow was shoulder height, Bomani. Like, for real. Like, I'm walking through tunnels, essentially. I have pictures of me walking through tunnels. Like, they're not going to close. It's private school, dude. They're not going to close nothing. That's a perfect example. Like, no, this is life. If we closed every time this happened, we wouldn't have nothing in Boston. And we just walking in the snow on both sides. is up to my shoulders. That's just ridiculous.
Anyway, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out, theundefeated.com. You see him on Get Up. You see him on First Take. You see him on Highly Questionable. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on Foxworth Friday on the right time. We do this show 3 times a week. Gabe Bassett and Tony Colletta, you handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to the right time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a few days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.